Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to Career Crossroads. My name is Jonathan Colleton, and if you're new here, this is my podcast where I talk to one person each week to find out how they ended up in the career they are currently in. I think there's a lot of pressure in society to know what you want to do with the rest of your life, but a lot of people end up switching careers. The career trajectories of my friends and I haven't been all that linear, and I think those are stories worth telling. My hope is that talking to other people will help me figure out what I want to do with the next stage of my career, and hopefully some other people will listen to these stories and it'll make them feel more confident in making a career move themselves. Today's episode is part of a pair of episodes that should go together quite nicely. This week, I'll be speaking to Ronak Patel, who is one half of the couple that owns Play a Latte Cafe in Kitchener, Ontario. Then next week's episode will be with Play a Latte's other owner, Heather Patel, who brings a very different background to the story of how Play a Latte came to be. While they both ended up at the same spot, the path that brought them there was different, and it's that career path we're going to be exploring. Before we get to the interview, I want to encourage you to check out the podcast's Instagram page, @career_crossroads, as I'm giving away a Play a Latte gift card for each of their episodes. If you're local to Kitchener, you can head over and grab a coffee or book a playtime for your child, and if you're not local, they have a great online shop where you'll be able to use the gift cards to purchase coffee beans, children's toys, and all kinds of other great stuff. So let's get right to the main event. Here is my chat with Ronak. Ronak, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, and more than that, thank you for giving me a recording space so I could come to you and record.
Not a problem. Yeah, it's an amazing studio, isn't it?
Absolutely. It works for now, you know?
Yeah, so, until the kids are screaming in the background.
That's right. And the kids screaming is something we will get to later on, probably closer to the end of this interview.
It's for good reasons. It's not torture.
Yeah, exactly. Like no, it's kids having fun in a currently socially distant safe way. So we'll get to all that as we get towards kind of what you're doing now in your career. But let's start off by talking about where you were many, many years ago. And who were you in high school? What influenced you? And what did you want to do?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I wanted to be a computer programmer. And it was just out of being around computers and just tinkering with things and breaking things and fixing them before mom and dad could find out.
So was this like, did your parents do that? Or were you doing this at home? Or was it something at school?
A combination. So we had some classes in high school where you could do things like that. It was like computer programming and computer engineering. But even at home, like every single remote we've had in the house has been broken by me and put back together, or I've tried to mess with it. And so I know that's not computer programming.
Well, it shows you have an interest though in like technology and how it's built and what it does.
And so my parents hated that because everything was always broken and it was a project that was getting fixed. It wasn't a big thing, but that's where the interest came from. My mom was an accountant. My dad was a machinist, so he'd make small parts, but it was never anything technology based, or it wasn't tech savvy or anything like that. It was just actual screws and bolts. So I'm not sure where I got it from. Just didn't want to get in trouble early on. So I think that's what it was, is fix my mistakes. And then it became a bit of an interest or a hobby of mine.
Okay. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Mississauga and Etobicoke. So I did elementary school and stuff in Etobicoke and then moved to Mississauga for grade 6 and onwards.
Which school in Etobicoke?
It was called Clairville. On Albion and...
Oh, like north.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Rexdale area.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was more like south central Etobicoke for elementary school. Our Lady of Sorrows, my old school.
Yeah.
All right. So, so you're in Mississauga. Yep. You want to be a computer programmer. And for someone in your age bracket, that's a great job. That's a great want to have had at that point in time, because that's when this stuff would have been exploding.
Yes. But at the same time, like I was talking to my dad and one of my uncles, they were saying like, everyone's going to know how to use a computer. And they didn't fully grasp what computer software development was or computer engineering was. Mm-hmm. So that was probably part of the problem, where they were saying, maybe don't go into that field because you're going to be one of every other person in the world who knows how to use a computer.
I guess that's an interesting point about like how the times affect your perception of jobs, because you're a little bit older than me. So that would have been like just after the dot-com bubble burst. Yep. So yeah, at that point it's like, is this really, obviously the internet's huge, but but if everyone's using it, then everyone knows how to use a computer. So what is a programmer?
Yep. And even me, like I didn't have the insight to say, oh, you know what? We're going to have phones in our pockets and it's going to control every aspect of our lives and the business side of things. So even I didn't know how big it was. It was just this is interesting. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. So even right off the bat there, where I was interested in computer science and computer programming, I was also thinking about what's my backup plan. And so I did a co-op where I actually worked in one of the elementary schools doing all of their computer work and network systems and taking care of all of that. To anybody who's listening who's an actual software developer, you can start realizing how little I know about that world now because it's been so long. But I was taking care of maintaining the computer labs at one of our old elementary schools, and I was a co-op job out of high school.
And you had co-op in high school?
Yeah. So I went to Rick Hansen for high school, and it was a very high-tech school to begin with, and I feel like we always had access to classes that not everybody else had. So yeah, I took advantage of that co-op opportunity where you could go and work in a computer lab and run the systems for another school.
That really shows me like how different every high school is going to impact what you might want to do based on what you have the option of taking.
Yeah.
Like my wife took a, I don't know if it was a home ec class or what it was, but where they had to actually like take home a baby and practice taking care of a baby in high school.
Yeah.
And I never had that. So
yeah, I don't think we had that either.
No. And like they had, I think a cooking class. I never had that. We had a computer lab. Yeah. And so yeah, programming was something that some people wanted to do out of my high school, but the next closest, one of the next closest high schools to me has an auto shop, and we didn't have that either. Yep. So like I never even, turns out I probably would have enjoyed working on cars. Never got the chance to do that. So yeah. I never knew it before I could have gone into that. But you know, now I guess I can in my spare time, but yep. It really influences what you end up wanting to do because it's just what you have access to.
Yeah. It's all about the experiences. And so that's where I saw computers as an interesting thing just on my own. Mm-hmm. But then my backup plan was optometry.
Optometry.
Yeah.
Why optometry?
Again, it was just me being exposed to, like, one of my cousins, she went to Waterloo. She was an optometrist, and I wasn't close with her or anything like that, but I just got to see a bit of that. Oh, there's somebody else who's an optometrist in the family. And again, I did a co-op in high school and an optometry clinic, and I enjoyed that. Like, it was a summer where I was driving or busing to Brampton at the time, going to the clinic all summer long, 5 days a week. And I enjoyed that. Like I got to see some patients and the doctor would call me and say, hey, he's our co-op student. He's going to be just overseeing some of the stuff I'm doing. And I found that interesting where you go through all these steps of prescribing the right kind of glasses to correct people's visions, but you can also see some other issues like, oh, you could have diabetes or you could have high blood pressure. And you could see that in the vessels of people's eyes. So I found that very interesting.
I've never heard this before. Yeah. That is interesting.
So there's so many things about like the eye that I just like, this is cool. And it's one aspect of it. And it's not going through everything that goes into medicine. And so I found that interesting. So I started setting that up as my backup plan. So when I was taking my grade 11, grade 12 courses, I made sure I had stuff for computer science, computer engineering, and going into like a pre-med or pre optometry program.
Good for you. That's a level of preparedness.
Well, it overlaps. It overlaps. And like how you were saying, I think in one of your last podcasts about not knowing how somebody could breeze through stats.
Oh yeah.
I could breeze through stats.
Oh yeah. I wanted Rachel to hear that because you were that guy she was talking about. Yeah. Who just blows through it. No problem.
And it was just one of those things that it overlapped well with both course requirements. So I took the advanced stats or whatever that class was called in grade 12. But yeah, like I was decent in science, I was decent in math, I was decent in the programming and engineering classes. So I said, well, it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. I can do what I'm interested in for both and get into a program that made sense for me.
Okay. So having to pick between one of the two, I think to apply to university for, yep. Or did you apply to different schools for each? Well, I guess optometry is an after, like you got to do an yep. undergrad and then you would do that. So you had the option, I suppose, I'm assuming, to yep. do a computer science program and then just take enough extra credits that you could have gone into optometry if you wanted to.
Yep. Oh. That would have been the smart decision.
Oh.
I ended up going on tours to the University of Waterloo, York, Ryerson. I checked all those in grade 12. And when I was talking to some of the students that were in UW's program class, they kind of talked to me about what are you going to do with this degree and what are you interested in? Just the conversation that I had with some of the guys, I'm like, you know what? I'm not that interested in programming. So let's go down the optometry route. Because one of the things that he seemed to say is like, you're working independently. You're on a team, but you're doing work on your own. a lot of the time, and I'd start talking to some of the other friends that I had who were programmers, and it was a lot of evening programming in the dark by themselves, and that was not me.
Yeah.
Like, I know we know each other from volleyball and all this other stuff.
Oh, yeah. That should be mentioned because that came up in Brendan's interview that, like, this volleyball mafia, everybody from that team is going to end up on this podcast at some point. So, yeah.
I was a social guy. Like, I wanted to be in front of people and with people.
Yeah.
Not just by myself in a dark room. And that's the kind of picture these guys were painting for me. And I know that's not the truth at all in 2020.
Yeah. But this would have been, what, mid-2000s?
Yeah, 2003, 2004.
Yeah. So it was a different time.
Yeah. And if anybody's been at the University of Waterloo, you can see where they're coming from, where all their classes were in the math building or the engineering building in the dark.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of daylight coming in there.
And this is before, like, every major tech company that exists right now, most of them didn't exist back then. No Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram, no YouTube. Google would have been around, but I don't really know what they did. Netflix was like a video rental service at that point in time.
Yeah, probably VHS, not even DVDs.
Yeah, probably. And I guess like Amazon would have been around, but he was working out of his garage or something like that.
Yeah, and that's a lifestyle. Like, I didn't want that garage lifestyle. I wanted to be in an office with people, or I wanted to have that continuous flow of people coming through. So when you're an optometrist, you see a couple of patients every 20 minutes. You seem like you're getting a new patient coming through. So I thought that was more what I was interested in. So I applied only for science programs or health sciences or life sciences programs when I was applying. And despite all that, I still ended up at the University of Waterloo because they had the optometry program for students who have finished fourth year degrees as well.
And I think there's only, what, two in Ontario?
Maybe? Yeah. There's one here Waterloo and one in McGill, and that one's in French. I don't speak French.
Well, I guess that kind of makes your decision for you.
Yeah, it was very easy. It's Waterloo is the only place that I can really go to and then go to the States or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went into, it's now called biomedical sciences, but back then it was like life science or pre-health. And so I accepted to go to Waterloo for that.
Biomedical is a much fancier name.
I feel like I have to say that with like a smirk on my face where I'm like, no, guys, I'm not a doctor. Anytime I tell anyone that, because they just think it's a crazy program, but it's good marketing is what it is.
Yeah. It's like biomedical sciences sounds like nanotech engineering is one of those other programs, right? Where that name is like, whoa, what does that even mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I had a lot of that when I'd say, oh yeah, I'm going to biomedical science. They're like, what is that? No, it's a mix of science, chemistry, biology, and I can't think of all the classes
that we take. And so optometry would be one of the paths that people would take out of that. And others might just be like working in a lab as a researcher, probably. Yep. A lot of people doing that.
Going to like becoming a regular doctor.
Yeah.
Not a regular doctor, but a doctor.
A doctor, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So like a general physician, yes. Yep. All right, so you get into the program and you go to Waterloo. And you're not an optometrist, so tell me, what happened in university that changed things?
I think it was a passion for it. I started meeting a lot of other students who wanted to be doctors, wanted to be optometrists. I like the end goal of that, of being an optometrist or a doctor for, again, the people. Mm-hmm. And this is where that experience and exposure comes in, where you kind of see the careers that you're exposed to. And so I saw doctors as a way to meet a lot of people, help people, work with them. But there's also business. There's also economics. There's so many other things in the world that you've been doing where you're working with people that I just didn't have a lot of experience with. And so I started going through the classes, and the more I went into it, I just saw like, this is not the career for me. And I can use my sister as an example now because she's an actual doctor. She is passionate about it. Mm. And if I was going to compare that passion to what I had back then, it's a very different, a different level of passion for it, where I was just interested and I liked it, but I wasn't going to sick kids hospital, volunteering or working. I wasn't obsessed with it like a lot of my doctor friends were.
So like, that's got to be, was that like quick into first year you figured that out?
Around second year.
Second year. That's even scarier because then you've already picked your program.
Yep.
And so now you've got to decide to switch programs.
Yeah. And again, the smart decision might have been to switch programs. And I started talking to a lot of people who are in science and business. I'm like, I'm interested in that. I don't want to add an extra year to my life in school. So what's the best way I can get through this? And I think I came across Larry Smith. He's one of the econ profs at the University of Waterloo. And I think I went into one of his classes and I was sucked in. And so the very next term, I had signed up for a couple of econ classes, including his. And I found, you know what? I'm not going to be able to get into science and business just because of the co-op and all the other experience that you need to have to be in there without adding an extra year of my life to it. I said, I'm going to minor in econ and that'll balance the science knowledge that I have and that I enjoy, just not enough to become a doctor with it, and go into econ and just get a bit of business experience because I found that interesting and that was valuable because that was real world stuff that you can kind of apply and understand right away. So I did that, and that's how I survived the academic side of university and got to a point where I had a science degree when I graduated and I had an econ minor, and that's helped with everything else in my career to say, yeah, I'm a guy who's got the science degree but working in the world of business.
I had no idea you had a science degree.
Yeah.
I just assumed it was business the whole time. So
nope.
That's cool.
Yeah, I had a lot of convincing to do. Like for any of the jobs I've applied to, it's, why are you here with this bio degree and what the hell is biomedical sciences?
Yeah.
But yeah, I had that econ as that extra thing in the back pocket.
So you've got that degree. Did you ever do any co-ops or anything like that in university?
No. And like the biomedical program doesn't have co-op for two reasons. One is anybody who wants to be a doctor is going to have a whole lot of schooling in their life.
Yes.
So again, extending that extra year into the program doesn't
help. Oh
yeah, I
guess all co-ops are
it's 5 years. Yeah. And the other thing is, people don't feel comfortable with co-op students treating them.
That makes sense.
If you're going to the medical field.
Understandable.
People give med students a hard time as it is. So imagine being like a second year student in biology and someone like me where it's like, oh, I'm not really interested in this, but I'm doing it for the degree. You don't want that person treating you.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So did you ever have summer jobs that were related to like econ or finance or anything like that?
No, I actually worked in a medical lab.
What?
My career doesn't make a lot of sense now that we're talking about it.
Well, I think a lot of people's don't, which is why I'm glad that I'm getting to do all these interviews. So, okay, what kind of lab were you working
in? So, it's called Life Lab. So
I know
just
Life
about,
Labs. I
just
hear
about
it all
everybody,
the time because Natasha has to communicate with them all the time for her job.
Yep. So I was basically unpacking all the samples that get sent from clinics and doctor's offices and prepping them for tests. So if you had a blood sample, urine sample, whatever, it would come to us in like freezer bags or cold packs. I'd be unpacking them, checking the health card number and all the biometric data that's along with it to make sure it's the right thing, coding it, and then the whoever's testing it tests it or it goes in through a automatic machine to take care of it. But that was my job, and it was this almost brainless job that I was doing in the summers. It would go from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. So it was in the middle of the night. It was actually great because I was in the best shape of my life then, because I would work from 6 to 2, go home, probably sleep until 9 in the morning, and then I'd go to the gym for like 2 or 3 hours. So for somebody who's in summer or just working, it's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, I get when like Monday to Friday or...
And it would bleed into Saturday morning. So that way I couldn't spend a lot of money in the night. Couldn't go out anywhere.
Well, that was one of my questions was like, did you have a good time while you were in university?
Yeah. So academics aside, I wanted to be involved in a lot of stuff. Like in high school, I think I did the high school band and that was for credit, not a full interest in music. I was just, okay, this is a quick way to get half a credit or credit towards my degree. Great. That was really it. So you've seen me play volleyball. Would not have made the volleyball team in high school.
And yet somehow our team was kind of good for a while there.
Yeah. So. I was always standing next to the right person to clean up my mess.
Well,
so.
We all know that Mark was the anchor on that team.
That's really it.
Yeah. Mark.
He's not here. The team's gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, I was never involved in sports or anything like that in high school. But when I lived in residence in university, Renison had the rec teams that I would always join. So it was ultimate frisbee, volleyball. I think we had a dodgeball team. So a bunch of sports that weren't really sports plus volleyball. And I wanted to be a Don really badly. And so one of the tips that I had from, I think, the RA or the res life director was get involved in other stuff because they want dons who have an experience. Mm-hmm. So that was my focus. Is okay, let's see what can I be involved in. And one of the biggest things was Warrior Weekends, and something that doesn't exist anymore, but is geared towards students who are underage, because we had a mix of students coming in my year who are over 19 and under 19.
Oh, you're the double cohort year?
I was after that.
Okay.
Just because there was a whole bunch of people who were double cohort, stuck around for another year and then went to school. So we were the echo of that. So we had a lot of students who were 19 plus, they could do whatever they wanted. But for all of us younger guys, we still needed programming that was geared to us, towards us that was underage. So I joined Warrior Weekends, where we'd have monthly movie nights, activities, events that were geared towards not having alcohol present. And that was a great experience because I got to experience the whole event management, event planning, and marketing for it to get other students on campus to come to these events.
Okay.
And it was very successful when I was there along with two or three other directors that were part of the team. And that was probably my first experience in that marketing world of actually putting some of the business practices in place. So,
so like you didn't have a summer job that actually helped you practice what you were learning in class, but you had a volunteer extracurricular thing that allowed you to practice some of what you were learning in class.
Yeah. And I was able to practice the lab techniques because I was still in those bio classes all 4 years.
But I mean, you knew that wasn't necessarily your future.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great that you've got the skill set, but I think it sounds like you just wanted to go into the econ side of things, but you wanted to keep the degree within 4 years. So you ended up finding this other way to get the practical experience of that volunteering.
Yeah. And it was fun too. It was with other university students. So Whereas working at Life Labs, it was really solo or almost mind numbing work because it was just checking if things were correct. This was an experience where I was part of a team. We were working together. We'd have failures and successes and enjoy that and laugh about it. And that really helped me with my first job. So once I finished the university degree, I actually went back to Life Labs and just continued to work as a student, thinking, okay, we'll figure out what my next job is. And I think I was working and Velocity popped up. And that was when they were opening this residence incubator thing for people who wanted to start up their own businesses. And it was really unknown back then.
Mm-hmm. And that would have been what year?
2008.
Yeah. So this is right on the heels of things like Facebook and Twitter exploding. Yeah. And so the University of Waterloo created this startup incubator and you found it early on.
Yeah. So I found it and they were looking for somebody to be the coordinator of that program. And I would have been the sole employee that was attached to Velocity at the time. Because they had living learning communities going on. And the director of the program was also the VP or president of the graphics arm of UW.
Okay.
And so I'd be basically answering to two managers and helping to run Velocity. So it was coordinating the students, again, marketing on campus to say, hey, there's a residence here. If you're entrepreneurial, you might want to check us out. Mm-hmm. Here's what you get out of it while you're living here.
How did you find that job? How'd you hear about it? And how did they end up picking you?
Yeah. So I was at Life Labs and I think I was probably browsing job opportunities on my break.
Which no one ever admits to while they're in a job, but afterwards. I was looking.
I was on my own data. I wasn't using their Wi-Fi.
Perfect.
So I was looking that up and I saw that it closes, I think, the next day. And so I applied immediately. And I think I scheduled the interview for the next morning. And the only reason I think I got a shot at that is because of Warrior Weekend. So the
person. Yeah, I guess that's where I was going. Your name, because you had done things during university, somebody knew your name.
Yeah. So the hiring manager.
Perfect.
Who I was going to report to in Living Learning, I had worked with her on Warrior Weekends for a year or two. So she knew I could deliver on the events and the programming side of things. I hope that's the reason. And so I put my name out there. I messaged her and said, hey, I want to apply for this. And they're like, we've got a spot at 9 o'clock in the morning. Can you come to that? I'm like, yeah, that's not a problem. I still work until 2 a.m. that day.
Oh, yeah.
So I get home. I don't sleep. I'm doing prep for this interview to figure out everything I'm trying to apply for.
You literally got an interview the day after you applied?
I think so. Or it was me trying to get myself there.
Oh, and she just told you come the next day.
Yeah.
Because you messaged her email or something like
that. Yeah, there was some kind of communication where I was getting a shot that I don't think I would have had if I was just applying.
Yeah, like if you didn't reach out, maybe you wouldn't have got the interview.
Probably not.
Oh. Well, there's a good lesson.
Yeah, like reach out and again, use your network if you've got it. Mm-hmm. And again, like the details are fuzzy in terms of how that actually worked out. But I remember like going home, telling my parents, yeah, I need the car tomorrow or tonight to go for this job interview in Waterloo.
Because you're in Mississauga
at that point? Mississauga. Yeah. I'm living at home with mom and dad. And I'm going to prep for this interview for the next couple hours. Probably not sleep, grab a couple of coffees, and then go there and hope for the best. And it worked out. They hired me on as a coordinator, and I walked into a construction zone in the residence.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is probably June or July. I got hired on starting in August.
And they were trying to get it ready for September.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they had 70 students coming in. They had the residence ready to go, but they were basically ripping out old, I don't know, kitchens, living spaces, lounges, all of that, and making it high tech. So they're putting a lab with Rogers, I think they were providing cell phones and mobile devices that students could work on and rent out. They're changing the kitchens and updating them. It used to be, an all-girls residence before, and so they're pulling out these sinks that women were using to wash their hairs and putting normal sinks in there that everyone can use. So a lot of stuff was going on, and they had like 30 days to get it ready before school started.
Yeah, that seems like a really tight timeline.
Yeah. I think the grand opening for Velocity, they were like moving temporary furniture in there while still like finishing the paint on the walls or like the trim or all those little things that add up.
That would not be the first university residence to get finished as people are moving in. So
yeah, I learned that now. I thought, this is crazy. How are they doing this? This is the norm.
Okay. So you start that job, and I guess, did that give you a chance to kind of flex that econ minor?
A bit. It was more for just understanding how the world works in terms of people are putting money into these entrepreneurship ideas. They're not expecting all of it back. Mm-hmm. It's that economies of scale. Like if I invest in enough businesses as a VC, I'm going to get a couple that pay off, take care of everything else. So it wasn't like I was going and saying, here's some economic policies to put in place. It was just
understanding. But you learned about investing, really.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, because what was your like role as the coordinator? What were you doing day-to-day?
So day-to-day, just providing support to the students. So they were there for a term, and they could treat it as their co-op, or they could treat it as a place to live and work on their side projects while still being students at the university. So they'd have their academic stuff, and then instead of, I don't know, going out for beers, they're probably drinking in their residence and working on their projects as a team. And the goal was to not get businesses to start up, but more giving them the opportunity to try and fail.
Yeah.
Okay. Not every idea at Velocity is going to be a multi-million dollar idea.
Yeah. I mean, how many startups never make it past, I don't know,
concept.
6 months, a year?
Yeah.
A concept, that's a better point, yeah.
So we had a couple of students who were in there that were just gung-ho about, I'm going to get this done, and I have a goal. And so I got to watch a company like Kik unfold. So Ted Livingston was one of the students that were in Velocity in that first year. He's blown up to create Kik, and he's created this fund for future Velocity students to apply for and start their business. Pebble was another one.
I know Pebble, yeah.
So that used to be called Alerta, which was attached to like a BlackBerry. And Eric showed up with this breadboard, and he said, I'm going to make a watch that's connected to your BlackBerry. And
we should point out that Research in Motion, which is now called BlackBerry, was founded in Waterloo. And so it exploded at this point in time, it was like one of the biggest companies in Canada, probably.
Yeah.
Like it was enormous, and it was all over Waterloo, and so everything was tied to BlackBerry at that point.
Yeah, it dominated the cell phone market at that time too.
Yes.
Like this is the year Apple came out with the iPhone. So BlackBerry was king.
It was the phone to have.
Yeah. And Android.
BBM was everywhere.
Yep. Android didn't even have a phone out, or it wasn't even a phone.
And BlackBerries were the first successful smartphones, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he wanted to create this thing, and Sean and I are looking at like, we've got resources for like software and like testing on phones, not an actual hardware thing. But despite that, like, he made connections, he found ways to work, and now Pebble's been a massive company that's already been acquired by Fitbit. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, this is a long time ago, so it's taken
and
time.
You get to see all this unfold like right in front of you. Yeah. As you're like, what, 6 months, a year at a university?
Yep. It was 6 months into it. Like, I was just a 1 year contract with Velocity. So these two stories that I have,
they were graduate in April and then like 3 months later get hired and started working at Velocity.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Pretty good turnaround.
Yeah. I was lucky. Especially in 2008 when the economy was tanking.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that changes things.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate to always have a job going. It doesn't make sense how I get them or how it
doesn't connects. Always, and that's we're trying to dissect right now.
I think that was the biggest thing in terms of entrepreneurship that's helped me in terms of like, oh, you don't have to have a perfect model to go and try something out. Mm-hmm. You might fail, but you don't know until you try it. And you have to put a lot of pieces together to make sure you don't fail.
It's not just... So, because you were saying people have to create a product or a software and then also have a business model to make it viable, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you can have a great concept. It's not going to work if you don't have a business model to go with it. Yeah. Or the business model could be great. The concept just sucks. So, you have to put all these things together and hope the timing is right, too.
No kidding. Yeah. You got to be like, if you you can't time the market, right? So you just have to hope that the thing that you have the idea for, the time happens to be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So you do your 1 year when you're contract at Velocity.
Yep. And that's where I've got that bug in me. Like, I want to start something. I can't program, but I want to start something.
Okay.
And so there's always these ideas that are toying in the back of my mind. So I leave the Velocity role and end up working for the university again, but this is in recruitment and communication. So it was going around all of Ontario doing those university fairs, talking to students, getting them to apply to UW, going to high school. So for somebody who's 21 or 22 out of university, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. UW gave me a car, they're paying for a hotel, and I'm hanging out with 21 other university, I guess, recruiters who are super outgoing, super gung-ho, and passionate about the school that they're coming from. And we get to meet up basically every day and talk about why students should apply to our university. Mm-hmm. So that was an awesome experience just to see Ontario. Like, I've never been to Ottawa. I drove down to Ottawa and got to see that. I was in Montreal for a while. I know that's not in Ontario, but I got to see a lot of Southern Ontario that I normally wouldn't have.
And my thought on that is realizing that you can jump from Velocity into recruitment, even though the jobs are quite different, because like, as long as you do well in one role, if there's another opportunity and you have the right skill set for it, which in that role is like, be outgoing, be willing to talk to people and be willing to talk through their questions. Yeah. You're really doing the same thing for both programs, even if it's kind of very different if you look at it from the outside. And so you're able to jump between those things because you work hard and people like you at the university. And so it doesn't matter that you don't come from that recruitment world necessarily.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the people who are in the recruitment world were just people who were involved in the university and could say, this is a story of Waterloo, this is a story of Laurier or U of T. Mm-hmm. That helps. Like, if you have those experiences, you can draw from them. So for me, having that experience of Velocity to say, yeah, this is a new thing that UW started, I was a part of it in terms of recruiting new students to come through the residence, was really cool. And here's the story of what these students are doing in school. This is a story that you could be a part of too when you come to UW. So it was nice to be able to do that.
Is that the 1 year? I know they have different contracts. Like, some are 4 months travel, some are a year. What did you have?
So this is a 4 month travel. I got kind of pulled into the UW during the time where I think they had a contract for everything. Like, they had a hiring freeze going on. Oh, okay. So any job I had was a contract role. I did that recruitment for main campus for a year. And then I went to one of the university colleges at UW again and did the same thing for St. Paul's, but that was a 1 year program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even know St. Paul's. I mean, it makes sense that they would have one, but I didn't ever know you worked there.
Yeah. So I was doing, again, recruitment there for their residence program. and they had a living learning community for environment. So I was doing recruitment there. And they also had Aboriginal Services that was part of St. Paul. So it was a joint role of supporting them as well with their recruitment and their events. So like INDEV, International Development, was one of them. That was an interesting program where students are going on social justice programs. So it's very similar to Velocity in the sense that you're going after what's your passion while you're still a student. So this one wasn't about starting a businesses. This was about making a difference in the world somewhere outside of Canada.
Okay.
So students had to go internationally and go and work on a project for 4 months instead of a co-op term.
Mm-hmm. And so the recruitment jobs don't really have a huge entrepreneurial financial component to them, but, and you said Velocity kind of put this idea, this thought in the back of your head that maybe that was something you'd be interested in. So were the recruitment jobs just like jobs that you enjoyed and you weren't really thinking too much because you're just like, I like the job I have, I'll just keep doing the job I have? Or was it, did you see it as like a means to an end?
It was more so I enjoyed marketing. Like I really enjoyed selling a concept or selling this dream or an idea to someone.
And that's what recruitment is.
Right? And that's what recruitment is. So that whole entrepreneurial spirit, that was just in the back of my mind of, I need to come up with an idea. I don't have one yet, but in the meantime,
you get to practice the skill set that will be useful when you do have an idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I got to sell this idea sometime. And so having that marketing experience really helped. And I feel like I'm a puppeteer where I'm like, hey, let me influence your decision and say yes to this school or yes to this program. Not trying to pull the wool over your head or anything like that and say, yeah, come here and make fake promises. It's let's figure out something about you and deliver something that we have available to you. And I really enjoyed that. And so I got to a point where just going through contracts after contracts with the university, it just wasn't viable. Like I wanted to have something a little more stable in terms of a career where I could grow. Mm-hmm. And so I made a decision to go and start hunting for a role outside of the university. And I applied for a software company as their marketing person. So there's actually a connection here of going from a marketing role to a marketing role, which hasn't happened yet. And they really enjoyed seeing the content that I had in my portfolio already. Like my resume stood out just because it was fancy and it was in color and it wasn't just text.
And Renai just pointed because he has it sitting in front of him right now so he could remember chronologically all the jobs. So
yeah.
Although this one's in black and white, so
yeah,
I can't get to see how nice and colorful it is.
Just imagine some reds and greens and yellows.
Perfect. I can see it already.
Yep. So they really liked the experience I was bringing. And this was a company that worked in oil and gas. So they were developing software to manage multi-million or multi-billion dollar construction projects. And they were providing the software to manage documents, manage transfer of information between all these major companies that are working to create this refinery or this oil rig off the shore of Australia. And so they didn't have the new insight of how do people market, how do people connect. So I was getting their sales teams on LinkedIn. I was getting them on Twitter and getting their website updated. So it's things that was easy for us to do when I was at Velocity or when I was at the University of Waterloo because we had whole teams that are responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now I'm putting all that experience together and doing it myself for the company. So again, it's telling that story of CoreWorks and being this oil and gas based company in Kitchener when all of our clients are in Alberta or Texas or Australia or China. And again, I got to see a lot of that project management side of things. And Sandra, who was my boss at the time there, gave me a whole lot of advice on just what do you want to do with your career? Because she was also a science grad from the University of Waterloo.
So, and she, I don't imagine her degree is what led her to that either. So she had a bit of a different path there too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she had done an MBA through Laurier. And so she said, maybe you should start considering this of getting an MBA or getting some kind of master's degree if you want to go further in your career, because you're going to keep getting specialist and coordinator roles. And I'm like, oh, that's actually not a bad idea, because everyone questions, why do you have the science degree and you're applying for a marketing role or you're in this recruitment role? And I didn't really have an answer. It was just my experience is different from my degree. Yeah, it just happened. And so I started thinking about, okay, I want to go and get this MBA, go and specialize in marketing, get the theoretical knowledge that goes with some of the experience I have. So I started looking into that, and I had to do a couple of courses just to get in. Stats was one of them again, because it had been far too many years since my last
university. You need a bit of a refresher.
Yeah, I need to get a refresh, and this is what Laurie wanted. So I started going back to UW despite leaving again as a student. So it was awkward to run into some students that I had recruited that are in class with me. I'm just like, oh God, just don't recognize me. Don't recognize me. So I think for Laurier, they just wanted to see a number of updated courses that just didn't happen to be in my academic career.
Gotcha.
So I went and took those classes while still working with CoreWorks. And I started realizing like the software side of things was struggling at the company because oil and gas had plummeted in terms of how much it costs to produce a barrel of oil. And this is where, again, the economy comes into play, where if you've got Saudi Arabia producing oil at a much cheaper rate, then bring on these projects in Alberta or the West Coast of Canada doesn't make sense, because to produce that one barrel of crude oil, if it's more expensive than what Saudi Arabia is getting, there's no profitability on that. Yeah, there's no way to make money off of that. So projects were getting shut down. So we were starting to see this pinch for CoreWorks, where they're just not getting the same business that they were getting when I first started.
How long had you been there by that point?
I want to say, like when I left, I think I was in that role for 3 years or 2.5 years.
Okay.
So it's just a slow progression where oil was just getting cheaper and cheaper to produce. And so their business just was struggling. I'm like, I don't want to stick with this because I know what the end is, and that's them getting bought out by somebody else and parts taken from the development side and used in the company. So I decided to go with something a little more stable in terms of business. And I applied to Count Insurance, so an insurance brokerage. And for those who don't know, like it's a fairly well-known brokerage in this area because Cowan does so much work with the community. They have a fund, they have donations, they do a lot of outreach. So I like that, let alone the whole insurance side of things, where it's a stable business, it's a stable system where everyone's going to be insured at all times. So I figured, hey, why not go in that, where I'm not creating a whole new playbook. Everyone knows what insurance is. Whereas before, we were trying to explain, what is Velocity? What is the software company for oil and gas companies? Whereas everyone knows it's insurance. Let's create the best story around it.
Okay.
So again, I took a marketing role at Cowan and got to help work with the team. So now I was working with a copywriter, I was working with a graphics design person, an events coordinator, and then myself, who was a mix of everything. And so a lot of the projects would come to me, and I'd work with the team to say, okay, we need some of this, we need some of this from the copywriter, some work from the graphics design. Let's schedule, let's figure it out to deliver to our client, who's also a Cowan salesperson. So I got to see the whole working for a bigger company. I know the university is fairly big, but when you're in a department, they're fairly small.
Yeah.
Same with CoreWorks, like it was a smaller company, whereas Cowan was significantly bigger. And so I'd be pulled in all these different directions in terms of what the demands were. So I got to see personal insurance, commercial insurance, investment for life, health and benefits for big companies. So I was supporting all these branches of Cowan, and it just got me to hone my planning and, I guess, project management and project lead at the same time.
Because it sounds like you were working with so many other people with different skill sets. You had to kind of coordinate all those skill sets.
Yeah.
Whereas with what CoreWorks, it was just you doing it all.
Yeah.
But now you got to manage people, or if not manage, work with them.
Yeah. So
and get them to coordinate all their different tasks.
Exactly. So it wasn't like I was managing them as a reporting structure.
Yeah.
It was just, hey, I understand what your roles are and how they work together.
Yeah.
And I can understand what the client's problem is. So we're going to figure out how to solve that. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to be that, I guess, funnel of where information comes to and I can spit it out. And so I really liked it because I was working with the team finally, and I had that support from the other people on the team, and I could actually support Cowan in terms of, using new skills that I had picked up when I was working at CoreWorks, where I was saying, okay, we need to, again, have a sales team that is engaged, using some of the software tools for marketing that are out there to make sure your funnel is filled with customers, so that if you're losing sales here, you can go on to the next customer and say, okay, let's get you through the sales process. They get paid commission, so we want them to succeed. So yeah, it was a good use of all the skills that I'd picked up in my previous experience.
That sounds like it.
And then I was doing presentations to our president or to our VPs to say, here's where we're going to take it. And that's where I was starting to use some of the science that I had, where it's, okay, this is metrics based. So here's a graph, here's information that I remember how to pull from labs when I was doing chemistry labs and science labs, and present in a form that they could understand. So it was a good mix of even using that degree that I've had in the back of the room that's not being used for anything.
Right. It's framed and just sitting there.
Yeah, maybe just one collecting day you dust. Need
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to find an office to put it in.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like there's an element of growth in that job. You're not just doing the same thing. Like, not that you didn't grow in those other roles, but you were doing kind of the same thing for the whole time you were in each of those roles. And in this role, you're really expanding that skill set and really growing. And what was the catalyst then for leaving Cowen?
So I blame Sandra for this.
So she gets credit and blame in this interview. Okay.
So when I was working with Sandra at CoreWorks, she had put my brain into go and get an MBA. So while I was at Cowen, I was actually doing a part-time MBA at Laurier in the evening. So I'd go to work, and Cowen was fantastic about it because they said, yeah, if that's what you're doing, here's some money to support you for it. If you need time off to go and write your exams, or if you need to study, we can do that too.
Well, that's nice.
So they were fantastic. And the way I paid them back was by abandoning them. So Sandra called me up.
Okay.
Yeah. She had been starting her own company. And I had been chatting with her just as like a networking thing and keeping up with what she was up to. And she said that they're looking for somebody to be a project consultant. So they had a lot of clients where they just needed them to manage the work that they're doing and coordinate all the activities that they have. So she said, I've got a prescribed plan for them. Here's what I need. And I need somebody like you to carry it out. And the only reason I was being asked is because she knew I could present. She knew I could work with clients. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an actual sales role, but I also understood the world of construction and project management and capital budgets and all that. So I only had one client, which was a municipality here. And I was working with them to get them on board for a variety of things when it comes to managing these large scale projects again. So it was putting on my CoreWorks hat to some degree, but also a bit of the marketing side of things of, hey, we notice you have another problem here. You might be interested in this, or here's how we can support you and come up with a new product idea that I'd kind of relay back to Sandra and say, this is a problem that all of our customers seem to be having. Can we create something for them?
Mm-hmm. So there's like an element of, it's a little bit salesy there too, right? Because you're trying to, the point of bringing that to their attention is like, it helps them and your company makes money and everybody's happy.
Yeah. I guess it is a bit of a sales role, even though it's not a sales role.
Well, it's like, you're really like a problem solver.
Yeah.
You find problems, find ways to fix them. Like I said, like the company benefits, the client benefits, everybody wins.
Yeah. And so I did that for a while, and consulting is interesting because everything you're doing is billable work. Mm-hmm. So as that project coordinator, consultant, everything I did had to be billed. We were keeping track of it all. And a part of me didn't enjoy that. It felt like I was getting paid to just talk to these people, which is true. But I didn't enjoy that. I understood it. I liked it overall, but like in terms of the big picture of, yeah, let's cut down on costs, let's save money for this municipality or this business, because if they do that, taxes go down. It just wasn't my thing. I wanted to go back into just a pure marketing role. So yeah, I left that role in Valency. And at the same time, I was talking to Heather about an idea that we had.
Heather being your wife.
Yeah, sorry.
She hasn't come up yet. And I figured at some point we should probably mention, during all of this, you got married and had a couple kids.
Yeah.
Or at least one. I'm not sure on the timeline there. You can tell me.
Yeah. So, yeah, all this work life was happening and I was still in the MBA program. So the week I started my MBA is the week we found out that we were having Kieran. So my first child. And this was a year or a couple months into being married, and he was due close to our wedding anniversary. So a year into our marriage, we were going to have a kid. I was going to be 6 to 8 months into a part-time MBA program that takes 3.5 years to finish. And I was starting a new job.
Oh, that sounds all so much fun.
Yeah. That's
a lot going on.
And yet, despite that, it gets crazier for our lives as we get closer and closer to 2020. And
somehow you found a way to play volleyball during all this.
Yep. I don't know when I sleep or what it is that, I don't know what's wrong with me that I keep doing all these things at once, but here I am.
That entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah. We're going to get to it somehow.
Yeah.
So while all this was happening, we had kids and all that. So I think we had Maya as well by the time I was at Valency. Or she was born actually partway through. So yeah, I wasn't enjoying the time of Valency because it was keeping me away from my family. Because with consulting work, you got to do the job whenever it needs to be done. And if that means you're not clocking out at 5 o'clock and you're clocking out at midnight, that's what happens. And it's not that I have a problem with clocking out. It's just it wasn't working with our lifestyle right now.
Yeah.
I needed to support 2 young kids. I had a 1.5-year-old at the time or a 2-year-old at the time and a newborn. So I wanted to be there for them as well. The consulting world didn't work out for me and I wanted to.
Careers are just careers, right? Like it's not the end. It's not everything.
No.
The point is it's got to work with your life too. And so if your life doesn't line up with a job and even if the job's good, like that means it's not working maybe.
Yeah. I didn't want to be away from the family all the time.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things was I think Heather and the kids and her dad went to the CNE and it was just them. So Heather's been to the CNE every year of her life. She has not missed a single one. This was the one where she was potentially missing because I couldn't go with them.
Mm-hmm. And the CNE, big festival at the end of the summer in Toronto.
Yep.
They have a big campus ground kind of in near the edge of the downtown core. Big festival, rides, funnel cakes, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, and they loved it. And so they went without me. And I'm like, this sucks. Like, I don't enjoy this. I don't want to keep missing out on things with the family. Like, I'd already skipped going on the cottage, or I said, you guys go to a cottage trip and leave me alone for a weekend so I can work on these things. So having multiple weekends like that where I'm just saying, family, go away so I can work.
Yeah, no
fun. It wasn't something I enjoyed, so it wasn't worth it. So I wanted to get back into the marketing world where it's something I really understood. And I went into digital marketing in Waterloo, not the university, like just a company in
city,
Waterloo.
Yeah.
And that was great. Because I was doing something I knew and I understood and I enjoyed. And I was getting a lot of great feedback back in terms of how I was performing too. And that was very much commission-based. So if you produce a lot, you get paid a lot. And so I was making decent money out of it too. And we had just sold our house and moved into a new place. So all of a sudden, we were sitting on a bit of cash. And the normal concept might be, go on a trip or invest it back in your house or do something for yourselves. We said, we've got a bit of cash and we've got this idea of mixing a coffee place and a play area. Because now we have 2 kids and we have this demand of caffeine and a place for my kids to run
demand
around.
Demand of caffeine. I like
yeah,
that.
We weren't huge, huge coffee drinkers before kids. Now,
it's funny how kids will change you.
Yeah, now we've changed quite a bit. And so we started going down that road of, how can we create this thing? And we ended up with a concept where we would have a cafe. It's going to have an indoor playground that parents can come into, grab a coffee, sit down. And it's something safe where they can watch their kids play at the same time. And then we'll work on some ECE stuff where it's an early childhood educator running programming in these back studio rooms. We'll get a dance instructor coming in, a music instructor coming in, and become this place where you can have a community for parents. You still have to pay into everything, but it's a different way and it's a different approach than what community centers have here right now. And there's coffee and it's good coffee. So that's where the concept of Play a Latte was born.
And of course, you have to have a pun in the name. Makes it so much more memorable.
That was all Heather. Despite having all this marketing experience and this knowledge,
Heather's the one. You failed me, Ronak.
Oh, yeah. Despite everything, Heather is much better marketed than I am because she understands the audience way better than I think a dad could. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But she's the mom. And she's part of the reason why Play a Latte exists because I think she was driving with Kieran and Maya or just Maya. And she said, yeah, I just went into a coffee drive-thru to grab a coffee. And that's not something she does. I'm like, why? And she's like, I just wanted something warm handed to me that I didn't prepare myself. And that's really...
That's where it started.
Yeah, that's where this started. That's where the concept of Play a Latte exists, where we want to give something to the parents while they can enjoy time with their kids.
I remember you explaining that the first time, and I was like, this is a brilliant idea, because I remember something that you had said, or maybe Heather said, was like, when you are a parent of young kids, you know other parents with young kids, and you want a place where you can all gather, and the kids can be doing something, but like, not everyone's got a big enough house where you can have a bunch of parents get together and the kids can be somewhere you can actually see them and be active and have a good time. But the facility you have created allows for that.
Yeah. Nobody's got a big house. Like, unless you've got a multi-million dollar house, everyone's house is tiny. The living room, the dining room, all that's attached to each other.
Yeah.
It's not a common environment when you have four kids. If you've got a friend with two kids and you've got two kids of your own, it's just chaos. Mm-hmm. And still, you have to prep the coffee at home. You still have to prep stuff. Whereas here, people are coming in, they're grabbing something or they're ordering something, and they're enjoying time with their kids or they're enjoying time with someone else. And Heather can definitely talk on this more because she's the social worker. But that isolation that takes place, especially for new moms, where they're just alone with this child, especially in winter or a pandemic, it's tough. And so... it's a way for us to solve even that problem for mental health without putting a big sign that says mental health solution here, because there might be a stigma to it or people don't want to be attached to that, where they just want to go and have fun and not think about any of the issues or the problems that they might be having. It's just, here's a way to get away. Mm-hmm. So I ended up leaving that role in digital marketing, and it was kind of a surprise for them. Because there's a news article written about us with our photo.
That came out before you told them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I remembered that you were saying like, oh, I'm trying to like start this, but I'm still going to work. And
so. Yeah. That like the time that I was at the digital marketing company was crazy because I'd go and work. I'd usually show up. So I was one of the older people at the company. And that was me being 31 or 32.
Old man at 32.
32-year-old man. But I would go there super early because my kids were already up at the crack of dawn. So me strolling in at 8 a.m. was a late start to the day for me.
Yeah.
So I'd do all the digital marketing work that I had. I'd be monitoring my campaigns. And then I'd come home around 4 o'clock, get stuff ready for the kids. And from 7 to midnight, we were working on plans for Play a Latte. And that meant creating the business plan, the marketing plan, the finances, coming up with the equipment that we need to buy, doing the floor plan, the layout, the paint, like literally everything from start to finish, and finding a place to lease as well.
Yeah.
So all that evening work that I had with the MBA for the previous 3 years was now coming back in just the endurance strength that you needed to go and work and then go and work on something else for another 3 hours. So it was 20 hours of work, 4 hours of sleep, repeat, and throw kids into the mix and whatever they're going to throw at you too.
So yeah, you're really burning the candle at all ends there between a day job and then the night job prepping for what would be your future as well as two kids. You've really got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And Heather was doing the same thing, working during the day.
So she was working as a social worker at a hospital as well. Give her credit. She was pregnant at the time. So now we had our third kid on the way.
Ah, yes.
So
because nothing makes life easier than a third child while you're trying to start a business.
Yeah, it used to be man on man. Now it's zone or it's 3-on-1.
Well, it's convenient that then the place you were trying to open was a place where you could have your kids hang out all day if you needed to.
Yeah, it was a fantastic thing for our family's lifestyle right now.
Oh, yeah.
To create Play a Latte. Yeah, so we opened February 2019. So I quit my job just at the end of January, kind of when news broke that, hey, this family is creating this play place. And we're at that point where I knew for sure Play Latte was ready to open mid-February. So I ended my job in January or the start of February and started working full-time here in a cafe.
And that would change things pretty dramatically because it's not like you were just doing marketing and the business plan. You were making coffee.
Yes.
So you can add barista to your resume.
I was the head barista, the head chef, whatever you want to call it. I was also the cleaning guy, the janitor, the, I don't know, like every other role that you would have to run a facility.
Like there's no one else you can tell to do things. Nope. You're doing all the things.
Yeah, it was me. Like we did start hiring other people. Like we did have a barista. We did have an EC on hand. But everything ends with Heather and myself. And Heather's still working. So it's on me. And I've never worked in a cafe. I've never worked in food services before.
It's a little bit different than the medical labs.
Yeah. There's a lot more. I feel like they test more often in terms of cleanliness and all that. But again, it was a big lab, so I don't know anything about that.
Right.
But yeah, like we had to get our food handler's license. We had to get first aid trained. And I needed to learn how to make lattes.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I came in and got a test one day.
Yeah. So while we were creating business plans, like once, I guess, Heather had fallen asleep or whatever, I would switch over to YouTube and watch how to make lattes. I'd start calling up other cafes that weren't in the region. So I remember talking to somebody in like Houston about how do you guys come up with your latte menus? How do you come up with your coffees? I was talking to roasters in around here to figure out what's the best partnership for us. So there's all these things that were happening to make up for the fact that I didn't have my own experience working under somebody else where I could practice and learn. It was straight up passion about figuring everything out. So I have so many textbooks or I guess coffee books that I borrowed from the library. I've bought books off of like Indigo or Chapters or bookstores to just learn as much as I could so that when we're pulling that first shot, I've got as much information as I have on hand to make a great drink. Mm-hmm. And so far, so good.
Yeah. So it's like you had to go and get a third education, but thank God for things like YouTube that you can, like the amount of learning you can do by this online video platform that didn't exist when you started at university, when you were looking into being a programmer before that, like how that's incredible how helpful things like that are, right? When you're trying to start something like this.
Yeah. And just the accessibility of places. So one of the things was watching YouTube videos. I was always listening to podcasts. So even if I was like working at the digital marketing company, like we could listen to music or have headphones playing in the background with, I have headphones on with stuff playing in the background. Mine was podcasts on coffee. So like there's a place called Keys to the Shop. I was listening to him. If I was shoveling snow, I had podcasts playing in the background. So it was just being a sponge and absorbing as much information as could about an industry that I've never really been in to make up for it.
Yeah. And I guess you have to, right? Because like the other alternative, it's not like, okay, if it doesn't work, you get fired.
Yeah.
Like this is where you put your money into this. This is your place. You and Heather own it, operate it. You've got to make sure it's successful. There's no one else to fall back on. So you got to make sure you do whatever you can to make it successful.
Yeah. And we did that. So we went from February 2019 all the way to December, and we were picking up steam. So Instagram is where we did a lot of our marketing. Facebook, that's where the mums were. That's where the parents were, where they're doing 2 a.m. feeds with their kids, and they're just scrolling through something. So before we had even opened, we had a pretty strong following, and that just grew over the last 10 months of 2019. And people saw the passion. People saw the amount that we had put in and making sure all the little things are taken care of, like having a takeout window on the inside so that if parents are getting a coffee, they're not abandoning their kids or they're not supervising them. They're always being monitored, having glass everywhere so one of our staff could see what's going on at all times in case there's an emergency or in case there's a problem. And just focusing on making sure everything's clean and tidy. Because again, the last thing a parent wants to see is their kid picking up garbage and putting it in their mouth. So I think having the experience of being parents ourselves, having the experience of marketing, having the experience of even the science of like what happens with contaminated food and all that. And it's not hard to figure that out, but you have an appreciation of it because I've been playing with Petri dishes and I know how mold and stuff works.
How that ends up coming back to help you.
But even like some of the science that goes into extracting coffee, like understand the osmosis process of creating.
It's funny when you said something about a shot before, and I know what you mean, pull a shot for espresso. And I'm like, how many people are listening to this actually know what that means? Because there's like a huge culture around coffee. Go look up a YouTube video or listen to one of these podcasts. And the people who are into coffee are like really into coffee.
Yeah.
It's very intense.
And it's fantastic. Like it's, especially with, I think the growth of Starbucks and then like the third wave coffee roasters and coffee or cafes, it's really changed people's mind and appreciation of coffee. And it's not just this black liquid that keeps you awake. It's got flavor. So it's very much like vintage wine. If you're interested in wine, you go all in. If you're interested in scotch, same thing. And now it's coffee.
And you're all in on coffee now.
We're all in it. And that's because our customers are also in it. So if you look at our customer base, they're all parents around our age. So they not grew up, but they've had coffee in their culture prior to having kids. Once they have kids, none of the cafes are really designed for a stroller. Mm-hmm. It's not designed for kids running around, but they're missing out on that experience as adults of having good coffee. So we wanted to create that experience where you've got 6 feet of space to roll your stroller through and you got a place for your kids to go and take off their shoes and coats. And if they scream and shout, They're having fun.
Everybody else is screaming and shouting too. So, which is maybe why, I don't know if anyone can hear any kids screaming or shouting in the background right now, but if you do, that's because we right now are in one of the back rooms of Play a Latte that we got all nice and sanitized. So, and we're nice and 6 feet apart and that's where we're recording this today. So yeah. And I'm going to get Heather on here too after, so people can hear her side of how this ended up, because that's going to be a different story too.
Very much so. And just the focus that she has with this place, it's really helped combine a bit of both of our passions in terms of working with people, marketing, and creating this new thing with her side of like social work and mental health. So yeah, I'll let her talk about that. But
perfect.
It's been a really good marriage in terms of just our own lives together, being married to your co-founder. But also on the business side of things, of we support each other in terms of the skills she doesn't have. I usually have it. And if I don't have it, she's got it.
Yeah. So it's like careers aren't just individual. Yours are totally linked together now.
Yeah. And I think it's been very much one way where she's been very supportive of my career in terms of letting me do an evening degree at the same time while raising children and all that. So I got to figure out how to pay it back to her. But it's going to take some time.
Yeah, you'll find a way.
Yeah.
All right. So if people want to, you know, if they're ever in Kitchener and they want to stop by, Play a Latte, where do they go? What's the Instagram account? Tell me all that.
So everything's branded Play a Latte Cafe. So when you're starting a business, sometimes it's better to look at what are the website URLs available, Twitter handles, Instagram handles. I somehow managed to capture all of them. So if you're looking on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok even, Play a Latte Cafe for everything. And yes, we're on TikTok now too.
Is it just like kids doing Fortnite dances?
No, it's actually, we've got a little hippo and a little cow toy and they've done all our TikTok. So that was our way of getting through the COVID boredom. Like we opened this cafe, it was doing great.
Yeah, yeah.
And come March of 2020, after making an amazing sale in January, amazing sales in February, we had to close our doors.
Yeah. We should totally have gotten into that because that changed your business model quite a bit for the time being.
Yeah. We were designed as a place where people come together.
Yeah.
We wanted to create a community. COVID asked for the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And so when we started looking into more of the science again, in terms of how COVID spread, it didn't make sense for us to keep our doors open. So we actually went on to Instagram Live and Facebook Live and said, guys, we're closing up. We don't know what that means for us as a business in the next couple of weeks or months, but I don't want Play Latte to be the place where two or three kids contract COVID and have something happen to them. Like, I just don't want that. There's no amount of money that's worth it. And I don't want to see that as a pain for some other parent. So we said, we're shutting our doors immediately. If you have a birthday party or whatever booked, and we had a whole bunch of stuff booked for March break, they're all canceled or postponed. And then the next day, I think the government said everybody shut down anyway. So, we didn't want to be open. So we had to pivot. We have to change the way our business operates. And there's a reason why 4,000 square foot cafes don't exist, because running just a coffee shop to fund everything is difficult. So Heather's made a lot of changes in terms of the way we operate, and I can let her talk about that in a future podcast. But yeah, we made a whole bunch of changes to the way we work so that we're friendly for curbside pickup. We're friendly for people who don't need to come in because it's not safe to be in the playground. Now that things have eased up and people are wearing masks, we've been able to open up our play structure. We've put in rules and stuff in place and increased our cleaning frequencies and all that. And we've worked with public health intimately in terms of making sure everything we're doing is safe. Because again, I still don't want some kid getting COVID on my conscience. So
yeah,
we're in a different state than we were in March, but we're always cognizant of what's going to happen next because numbers are rising. Depending on when you're listening to this, we're in October of 2020. So that could be a problem again.
Yeah. So, and I will just tease, and I'll put the link in when I post this, that you have this awesome online boutique where you're selling all kinds of interesting stuff for parents and kids. And so Heather can explain all about that. But if you're listening to this, go and take a look at it.
Yeah. Everything's on playlattecafe.com. Instagram or Facebook, Play a Latte Cafe.
Perfect. All right. Well, and if you're ever in Kitchener, come on by, Play a Latte, you know, post-pandemic when you can just come on in and get a coffee.
Well, if you've got a mask on, you're welcome to come in.
There you go.
Or curbside pickup.
Perfect. All right, Ronak, thank you so much for sharing that whole story today. And I know it's a super interesting one because you've like pivoted into this whole new business and it's really changed a whole lot in your life. And it's very cool to hear about how all that started. So thank you very much.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, so that is Ronak's story. And after each interview, I reflect on what my interviewee had to say and try to find some common themes or nuggets of wisdom and sum them up for you and for me. One of the major moments in Ronak's career path that really stuck out to me when I listened back was his time volunteering for Warrior Weekend in university. He didn't talk about it very long during the interview, but I see it as the first domino in a chain that leads directly to Play a Latte. And here's my logic. His time with Warrior Weekend allowed him to practice event planning and marketing. Because he enjoyed what he was doing, he was good at it, and it put his name on the radar of some of the staff at the University of Waterloo. So when he was browsing for jobs one night, he sees the posting for a coordinator role at Velocity. And since he's a known entity, he gets an interview and proves he's the right fit for the job. While at Velocity, he sees the incredible entrepreneurial spirit of these students, a place where people see problems and create a solution. And 10 years later, after numerous jobs and a long stint in grad school, there's been a change in Ronak's life. Children. And with children comes the necessity for coffee. Suddenly, the man with this entrepreneurial muscle finds a way to flex it, and Play a Latte is born. And that might not even be the last domino in this chain, it's just the one he's at right now. Another thing I noticed is that on multiple occasions, Ronak had to face the reality that there was a difference between interests and passions. Computer science was an interest, but he found that he wouldn't like the lifestyle. And then the same thing happened with his next plan to be an optometrist. He saw people around him that were truly passionate about medicine, and he realized that was not the right path for him. All it took was one single economics class for him to find something that he should be doing with his career. And tied to all that, and what I really want people to take out of this interview, is that your degree and your first plan for your career does not define you. There are a lot of people who think about being a doctor and then decide to do something else. And the degree you graduate with won't limit you if you can show you've learned something valuable during your education. It's come up before that it's not the piece of paper that matters, it's what you actually learn while you're getting that education. Does anybody care that Ronak's degree is in biomedical sciences? No. Because he picked up marketing skills and a passion for entrepreneurship along the way, and those are the skills that have helped define his career path, not the program written on his degree. If you have that spark to be an entrepreneur inside of you, don't stress about the timeline. Ronak had two kids and was in his 30s before Play a Latte came along, so when your idea is ready, it's ready. And that brings us up to speed on Ronak's career. As Ronak said, you can find Play a Latte on all social media platforms, and I've left some of the links in the podcast description on whichever app you're listening to this on. And if you live in Kitchener, stop by because he makes a damn fine cappuccino. Also, don't forget to check out our Instagram page, @career_crossroads, for a chance to win a Play a Latte gift card. maybe you can get that cappuccino for free. Tune in next week to hear Ronak's better half, Heather, explain how she went from a major in social development studies to founding Play a Latte.